You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with another Taco Tuesday episode of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, here with our regular Taco Tuesday guest in Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, we're kind of now in the main area of that lull period. Minicamp is over. We're kind of waiting for training camp, waiting for the preseason, and of course, waiting for the 2021 regular season to kick off. How you doing today?
Doing quite well. We are at that dog day point. Baseball is in full swing. Luckily, we've got basketball going a little bit later than usual this year to carry us through summer as sports junkies. And now with the Ravens minicamps behind us, they were very fortunate to make it out without any major injuries or any major issues or any major headlines. And it feels like maybe the Ravens aren't the shiny new toy in the NFL or the AFC or maybe even the AFC North anymore. So that typically throughout this franchise's history, while it might be, you know, recency bias or confirmation bias, the Ravens seem to do best when they can fly a little bit under the radar. With Lamar Jackson now entering his fourth year and having 3 years as a full starter this year, it'll be a good situation for a team that has a lot of continuity as well as some exciting new pieces.
Yeah, I agree, Spencer. And this is kind of the year where I think a lot of people are expecting the Ravens to take that next step, myself included. You know, the team has been in the playoffs every single year that Lamar Jackson is, you know, he took over as the starter in 2018, led the Ravens to the postseason in that 14-2 record in 2019. And in 2020, they had to win a ton of games in the back half of their season. They did, and they've been in the playoffs, but it's been wild card exits. It's been divisional round exits. So now, you know, it's, all right, AFC Championship, Super Bowl appearance, Super Bowl Championship. It's getting to the point now where Lamar Jackson and even guys like Mark Andrews and those younger guys aren't those rookies anymore. They're not those young guys anymore. They're kind of entering that almost veteran-ish territory with Lamar Jackson entering year four and whatnot. But Spencer, minicamp 2 days for the Ravens last Tuesday and Wednesday, and it was something where a lot of headlines came out of it, and there were no injuries, none of that. But I think one of the big ones was the secondary. On the first day of minicamp, the Ravens secondary was all over the place, according to people who were there. Anthony Averett was active, Marcus Peters was active, even guys a bit lower on the depth chart, Chris Westry and Khalil Dorsey. Spencer, the Ravens secondary, obviously one of the deepest parts of the Ravens defense and the Ravens roster in general, but with the cornerbacks in particular, they kind of have their top six, in my opinion, with Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters, Shimmy Smith, Anthony Averett, Tavon Young, and Sean Wade. But that leaves some guys like Dorsey and Devontae Harris and even Imon Marshall on the outside looking in. How do you see the Ravens cornerback battle shaking out during training camp in the preseason?
Well, Imon Marshall, you know, might have a little bit of an inside track as a guy that had an injury and was a relatively high draft pick, as opposed to Dorsey and the Devontae Harris's of the world. But ultimately, the preseason is going to be pivotal in that position group and probably for the receiver room as well. And the offensive line room, it's going to be fun to see preseason back and having these, you know, deep battles where guys are actually duking it out for these roster spots. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, Imon Marshall, a guy who's a bigger, maybe outside cornerback type. And the Ravens are kind of littered with those right now. But Tavon Young, Sean Wade, and maybe Brandon Stevens are the only guys that fit that slot profile. And Marlon Humphrey's played there a ton as well. But the Ravens are kind of flush with bigger outside bodies, which is rare. That's something that doesn't happen that often in the NFL. And you mentioned guys like Anthony Averett, who have been chomping at the bit, and the Ravens have spoken before, and Chris Hewitt has spoken, and DeWink Martindale has spoken about how they see Anthony Averett as a starting player in the NFL. And having someone like that be your, you know, fourth, fifth guy is just a luxury. But the proverbial cornerback depth is always erased at some point. Your cornerback depth is never safe. You can never have too many cornerbacks, and the Ravens have seen it happen year in and year out. So this year with Brandon Stevens, you know, has been taking some snaps at safety, and Sean Wade probably going to fill in that number two slot role, and then it's not going to leave a ton of room. So special teams is going to be a major, major factor for anyone else to make the team. And whoever is that last guy, you know, maybe it's decided by injury. Maybe the Ravens are able to stash someone on IR. Maybe, you know, who knows? But at this point, a trade wouldn't be shocking before the season. a IR stash wouldn't be shocking. And ultimately, this team has some tough decisions in a couple of rooms, and it's some valuable players. So the best way to go about that, in my opinion, is if you can't IR stash them, is to get something in return for them that you need, or some draft capital. You don't just want to let a guy walk for no reason. But at the same time, it's tricky because teams know the Ravens can't keep 8 cornerbacks. They can't keep 7 cornerbacks. So they don't have a ton of leverage unless they can get a little bit of competition going on and have two teams bidding and driving up the price and something of the sort. So we'll see how it plays out, but definitely one of the most interesting rooms really in the entire NFL. The Ravens are stocked at corner, one of the best position groups, one of the best rooms of any team in the NFL. And it's going to be fun to see how this season plays out. And that's been such a good unit for the Ravens over the last couple of years, especially, you know, headlined by Humphrey and Peters, let alone the depth that they have right now. But it is on paper, and we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, in that room, there are going to be some tough decisions. The Ravens might have to part with, you know, 3 quality NFL players who they just cannot house on their 53-man roster because they just don't have the room because they're so talented at the position. But Spencer, moving on to the offensive side of the ball here for a bit before we head into our first break. Rashad Bateman, it was reported that he had some ups and downs during Tuesday's practice, but the big play that everybody's talking about, and Marlon Humphrey himself talked about it, is he shook Marlon Humphrey with a nasty inside juke release and ended up getting wide open for what would have been a touchdown. But also, you know, the downs there as well. He apparently slipped on another route, and that led to an interception and dropped a couple of passes. So, Spencer, with Rashad Bateman, everybody looks, and the most recent example of this is Justin Jefferson, is kind of a late 20s first-round pick wide receiver who makes this amazing impact. Where do you see Rashad Bateman making an impact, and how long do you think it will take for him to get, you know, fully integrated into the Ravens offense in terms of finding his spot and learning the NFL game and just what it takes to play at the next level?
Well, Rashad Bateman and Sammy Watkins both were brought in to bring outside prowess to this receiving room. Bateman is going to set up hesitations. He is going to release, get DBs in a neutral stance, backpedaling, and then snap off really cleanly. His ability to snap out of, in and out of his breaks so fluidly is nearly unguardable at times. So him, kind of similar to, you know, maybe a Keenan Allen, a Michael Thomas, a Reggie Wayne, guys that can win inside, can win underneath, and get DBs jumping downhill, then boom, he's athletic, he's fast, he's big, he's long enough to be able to win down the field as well. So setting up sluggos, setting up some little hesitations in a go route that get DBs flat-footed and winning that way. So it feels like it's going to be a lot of slants. It's going to be a lot of opportunities for him to force missed tackles and gain first downs that will set up DBs getting scared of that and having to jump inside. And that's going to set up vertical balls, vertical shots for Rashad Bateman, who figures to get a ton of one-on-one true island opportunities, as well as Sammy Watkins on the outside. And that's going to allow Marquise Brown to thrive in the slot, where he led the NFL in touchdowns in his rookie season and has shown a really strong propensity to be able to run some great seam routes, some great deep fades off of the inside slot position. So ultimately, it's going to move things around. It creates a more versatile situation. But I just think those slants, those quick inside releases where he gets DBs neutral and then snaps off once it seems like he is already kind of broken and is going to go for a go route. And then he's able to just very cleanly separate back inside. And he's one of the most underrated, he was probably the most underrated player after the catch, him and Elijah Moore maybe in this draft class, because he forced a missed tackle on about a third of his receptions in college. So showing, you know, guy has three, four catches, they're going to make one or two guys miss. That starts to wear on a defense and get extra attention, get safety attention. And then you can set up plays based off of that. That's where Marquise Brown is going to get, you know, less safety help over top. If you're worried about Rashad Bateman being able to break inside, catch the ball, and then make someone miss and go the distance, safeties have to start leaning to stop those plays from happening. You don't want Rashad Bateman consistently breaking off 10, 15, 20 yard catches. And overall, you know, Bateman and Watkins as well, who apparently had a very strong camp, are just going to add a nice harmony, a nice balance overall to this offense that is going to take pressure off of Mark Andrews. It's going to prevent defenses from really giving great help over top to Marquise Brown, who can absolutely fly. And it's going to be a good situation for the Ravens, who field deep at receiver finally.
Yeah, this receiver room definitely has a different feel to it, and I think it is because of the depth, but also it felt a bit in 2020 like the Ravens were using a lot of different slot options on the outside. And that's not to say that those guys can't do it, but to have guys like Watkins and Bateman on the roster who can get you wins on the outside, I think it's going to be really important for this Ravens team just to have guys who can do both, but also profile as outside receivers. We're going to head into our first break now, and when we return, we're going to be talking about more observations from Ravens minicamp here with Spencer, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can check all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all of the UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And we are back with our second segment of this Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, getting into more observations from Ravens minicamp, I do want to start off this segment talking about Lamar Jackson, because we talked about the secondary in the first segment, and the secondary having a good day on Tuesday meant that the quarterbacks really didn't. It was kind of an up and down day for the quarterbacks. Lamar Jackson struggled, Trace McSorley struggled at points, Tyler Huntley struggled at points. All three apparently had just a regular up and down day. But on Wednesday, day two, Lamar Jackson apparently lit the world on fire, according to Jonah Schaefer of the Baltimore Sun. Jackson went 21 of 27 in 11 on 11 action. And these are just the ups and downs of a young NFL quarterback still improving his game. So, Spence, when you look at what Lamar Jackson has said, what you are hoping to see out of Lamar Jackson, where do you want to see the most improvement in his game when he suits up for week one?
You want to see the most improvement in consistent, efficient footwork and anticipation. And it's anticipation in terms of getting the ball out as receivers are breaking, something he did really, really well. And has something he's always done really well dating back to Louisville was anticipate throwing windows and get the ball out on time. He struggled last year. It felt like he didn't trust his pass protection. He didn't trust his offensive line to get the job done. And he didn't trust every receiver to be able to make plays. There were a lot of times where he was late getting the ball out to Marquise Brown. And, you know, does that maybe have to do with the fact that Marquise Brown is not the biggest guy in the world? Yeah. But if you get the ball out earlier and make him the only one capable of running under a ball, he's probably going to go get it. Having Watkins, having Bateman, guys that are bigger, can force missed tackles. They can, you know, especially Bateman winning contested catch areas is going to allow him to throw with more anticipation. But at the same time, it's, you know, two new targets, two new receivers that you have to get the ins and outs with. He's been working with Andrews and Brown for a few years now, and there are going to be miscommunications. There are going to be wrong routes run, wrong reads made by Lamar and all that good stuff. And that's just growing pain. So it's bound to happen. But if he's able to keep his footwork calmer and trust his pocket to hold up a little bit more, you know, there's a degree to which it's difficult. How many shots do you want to take? Especially when you're a quarterback that runs the ball a lot. But for the Ravens to take the next step forward, his feet need to be calm. He needs to be confident, having a statuesque back foot that he can plant off of, opening up his front leg, opening up his hips and driving through the ball. And that's what he spoke about in his press conference, was footwork. Oftentimes we would see Lamar Jackson taking three steps, seeing three taps of the toe where he really only needed one. And it causes, you know, late throws. And that is how you end up allowing defensive backs to recover, to close throwing windows, to contest catches and make plays. So getting the ball out earlier, throwing with more command and more precision in his feet, more confidence overall, is something that can make the Ravens a Super Bowl team. And that is what is needed to get over it. But that also goes hand in hand with pass protection. That goes hand in hand with him being able to make the right reads and maybe help out his offensive line. He also has more veterans on his offensive line this year, and Zeitler and Villanueva and Bradley Bozeman moving to center, Ronnie Stanley coming back. So you've got four pretty sound veterans who have played a lot of football games in the NFL, and then a couple guys fighting for one position. So having at least three strong veterans, you know, Bozeman is learning a new position, but with Zeitler, Villanueva, and Stanley, hopefully they'll be able to help Lamar out, to call more pass protection out and pick up on more blitzes, you know, slides, twists, stunts, all that good stuff, and make Lamar more confident. And a more confident Lamar, a more calm Lamar feet-wise, like I said, is the key to the Ravens winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah, Spencer, and speaking of Lamar Jackson trusting both his pass protection, but also his pass catchers, I think that it seems like over the 2 days of minicamp, it was reported a lot that Sammy Watkins and Lamar Jackson are starting to get each other down. And it says that, you know, Watkins is starting to develop Lamar Jackson's trust. And I think that's a big development, especially so early on, because sometimes with certain receivers and quarterbacks, at least those combinations, it can take a couple weeks, a couple months, you know, sometimes even a couple years in some scenarios to get that connection fully down. But how important is it for Lamar Jackson and Sammy Watkins to click early in the 2021 season and carry that throughout that whole year?
Well, it is important to click early, but I'd say it's more important to click late and be on the same page by November, December, and really confident, able to, when the weather gets colder, and we'll talk about some AFC contenders and pretenders in the next segment, but when you're playing in Kansas City and Buffalo and Cleveland and Pittsburgh and Baltimore in December and January, you're not going to be throwing the ball quite as much. And when you are, you do need to be on the same page. You got to be able to take advantage of less pass attempts and play with efficiency. And that's what the Ravens talked about in the offseason, wasn't necessarily throwing the ball more, but trying to get as efficient as possible. And they can't afford to be having miscommunications. They can't afford to be second guessing. They can't afford to be not playing, you know, at full speed with anticipation and precision later in the season. You don't want to see them start off slowly, of course, because that can deter trust and it can lead to a slippery slope of discontent and poor, you know, execution all the way around. But ultimately, it's more important to be clicking through October, November, December, January, you know, later in the year. So affording some hiccups early on isn't the end of the world. The Ravens should be able to run the ball early on and, you know, get themselves into a winning position. You know, worst case, you would think, you know, maybe 3-2, something of the sort, and hopefully able to walk out and go through October and November and establish a nice winning record. And then they can continue to develop and work on things chemistry wise and call plays for Sammy Watkins, call plays for Rashad Bateman. Hopefully there's a little bit of garbage time, you know, again, which helps the Ravens out. But at the end of the day, they need to be clicking when it's playoff time. So they have up until you want to say, you know, around Thanksgiving to really get rolling and be on the same page. And that's going to come with a lot of practice, a lot of communication, a lot of reps and all that good stuff. And the dangerous part about that is that Sammy Watkins himself says that he's a person who goes too hard in practice and it leads to some ligament issues and some core muscle injuries and soft tissue issues and things like that. So it's trying to monitor his workload and make sure that they're mentally on the same page without overdoing it, as Watkins is a player with a ton of wear and tear on his body at this point in his career. So there's a fine line, there's gray areas and all that good stuff. But as long as the Ravens are really clicking when they need to later in the season, they'll be in a great place. And it feels like everything is setting up beautifully to be a more advanced, well-balanced offense than they have been, especially last year and even more so than in potentially 2019.
Yeah, I do think their pass game is going to be able to feed off of what their run game has done for these last couple of years. And also their run game is going to be able to feed off what the pass game can do in 2021. And that will overall make them a very dangerous offense, even more so than what we've seen over these last couple of years. But Spencer, moving on to the defensive side of the ball, moving back to that side of the ball, I think that a position to watch is the interior defensive line, because the Ravens, they have what many people call the Monstars. That's their nickname, Calais Campbell, Derek Wolfe, and Brandon Williams. But they are all another year older. They are all still over 30 years old. So someone who I think a lot of people have their eye on, and my pick for the Ravens' huge breakout candidate of the year, is Justin Madubuike. Someone who I think is going to get a ton more opportunities, because I think the Ravens are going to scale back that trio snaps of Campbell, Wolfe, and Williams. How do you think the Ravens are going to manage these snaps between the four of those guys? And do you think that maybe the Ravens should consider scaling their playing time back even more than they did in 2020?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Calais Campbell, it is imperative for him to be healthy later in the season. He is one of the oldest active players in the NFL that is not on special teams particularly. And he, you know, shouldn't be playing wing on the field goal unit. He needs to be, you know, rested. I would try and save him for later in games a little bit more so. And later in the season for sure. Derek Wolf, you know, you want him playing. He's not as old as the other two. He's had some problems. He currently has pneumonia, which I feel like is a little bit underrated in how debilitating that can be. But Justin Madubuike is on a rookie contract. He is a young buck. He didn't have a ton of wear and tear last year. He was a younger player coming out of Texas A&M and played really well. So all of those trend in the direction of him playing an increased role. And especially, like I said, early in games, early in the season, and trying to save the tread on the tires for some of those older defenders. But the problem is, you know, Campbell plays a lot of five tech. Who do you trust to play five tech behind Campbell? Maybe you try Madubuike there. He doesn't really have the length that, or this height or wingspan that you traditionally want there, but he's not, you know, mega undersized. And other than that, you know, Broderick Washington, a guy who had some legal troubles, but is now, you know, all good to go in that situation apparently. And it's going to be tough to figure out who's going to play five tech when you want someone to. So it's Wolf and Madubuike three tech. Madubuike is not going to be playing much nose, especially not on first and second down. So it's going to be three tech, and the three tech is Derek Wolf a lot of the time, as well as Campbell. So rotating those guys in that position and figuring it out is imperative, but you do want to see Madubuike take over. You feel like he was on a properly regimented plan in terms of gaining experience and confidence and not putting him in bad situations. But then he ends up having to play a ton against the Browns with, you know, a couple veterans out last year, late in the year. And he put on a show. He beat up on Wyatt Teller. He beat up on the Browns offensive line and caused a bunch of pressure and made a few plays against the run. He was a factor against the Jags big time as well. So I'm right there with you. Madubuike is one of the most talented young interior defensive linemen in the NFL. And I think we're going to see a lot more playmaking from him. He looks even leaner than he was last year and is in that new age sort of tweener defensive tackle size where he's, you know, 290, 280, 300 pounds, somewhere in that range. But he is mighty quick, mighty strong, and able to chase and run down screens and run sideline to sideline and make plays that defensive tackles don't traditionally make. So he's going to bring energetic, shot out of a cannon, young, quick off the snap presence for that Ravens interior defensive line. And he has a chance to be the first real high impact interior defensive lineman drafted by the Ravens since Brandon Williams. And that's been quite some time now, as Williams is into his 30s. So Madubuike feels primed to go, and like he's going to get a lot of chances early on if the Ravens are comfortable and, you know, not really, you know, falling behind the eight ball and find themselves 1-3 or 1-4 or something like that and need to rely on the veterans to dig you out of a hole. But Madubuike has every chance this year to prove that he is a player that the Ravens should consider a cornerstone kind of player on that defensive line. And regardless, they don't really have anyone besides him under contract for next year. And him and Broderick Washington and Derek Wolf, those are the only three they have under contract in 2022. So this is going to be a big year for Madubuike to show that he should be that starting heavy snap versatile player that the Ravens have wanted out of their drafted defensive linemen over the years.
Yeah, and I think he will do just that, because I do think Madubuike has a bright future in the NFL, and with the Ravens, he could be someone who steps into a huge role in 2022, because you mentioned Spencer, it's only him, Broderick Washington, and Derek Wolf under contract. So that could be the unit, and obviously plus a few other additions, but Calais Campbell, you know, he said he's going to play out this year and see what happens, see how he feels. Brandon Williams, can they bring him back? So I think that Madubuike is going to be, he's primed for a huge role in 2022, but it's this year in 2021 where he has to establish himself and prove to the Ravens that they can put the confidence in him to do that. But we're going to head into our final break now, and when we return, we'll be taking a look at the AFC as a whole, talking about some contenders and pretenders, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be back soon. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. What's your favorite Built Bar flavor? Did you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors, including coconut, coconut almond, raspberry, mint, brownie, double chocolate, and salted caramel? Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. Order today and get that raspberry or mint brownie or whatever you like. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off of your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. And we return with our final segment of this Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher is still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, the Ravens are contenders. I don't think anybody is arguing that. Maybe a few people, but I am saying they are contenders. They are a team that has a very explosive offense, a very sound defense, and a great special teams unit. But there are going to be plenty of teams throughout their own conference in the AFC that are going to challenge them for that AFC crown. Spencer, obviously, people look at the Chiefs and the Bills as two of the top teams in the AFC, right alongside with the Ravens, and the Browns are starting to get into that conversation as well. That's almost like the big four, in my opinion. But with those teams, with any others you have, who are the Ravens' biggest threats, maybe two or three teams in your opinion?
The biggest threats for me are the New England Patriots, and I would also probably roll with a sneaky one, and I think that is the Los Angeles Chargers. The reason being quarterback play. And people want to go look at Cam Newton's lack of touchdown passing production last year and go look and rip the Patriots apart. But when you step back and look at what the Patriots were last year, they had more key players opt out than any other team. They get some of those back. They own this crazy free agent spending spree. They get guys like Kyle Van Noy back. They got Matt Judon. They have a litany of offensive weapons now and have made plays for Nelson Aguilar and have Jacoby Myers still emerging. And it just feels like the Patriots are primed to have one of the most complete teams in the NFL. They have Cam Newton in this one-year deal where he wants to prove himself. You have Mac Jones chomping at the bit behind that. And Cam Newton has the Patriots have a gloriously diverse run game, even more so than the Ravens in ways. So they can present really scary matchup problems. Their offensive line is outstanding. They have a ton of pieces there, despite losing Thuney. They still have a good offensive line. They still have Shaq Mason. They still have Michael Owenu, who emerged last year as a dominant player. And the Patriots have players all around. They still have J.C. Jackson. They still have Stephon Gilmore. They've got a bunch of pass rushing options. Now they get Dante Hightower back, one of the most underrated defensive players of his time in the NFL. So I believe that the Patriots are balanced. They obviously have continuity in their coaching staff. They're well coached. And it feels like Bill Belichick is really trying to go out with a bang. We don't see him coaching 15 years from now, but in these last couple of years of his era as a Patriots, legend coaching, one of the greatest coaches, if not the greatest coach of all time, especially in our lifetime. I think that they're a serious threat this year. And if, Cam Newton is to get hurt, you're having Mac Jones step in and step into an offensive play caller in Josh McDaniels that is familiar with working with young quarterbacks. He had Tim Tebow operating as a playoff caliber quarterback. So I think the Patriots have weapons. I think that they were a little bit scary last year. They gave the Ravens a hell of a time in the rain and ended up shocking them and beating them pretty handedly last year. So I think they certainly pose a threat. And then you look to the Los Angeles Chargers, who had Justin Herbert have a, historic rookie quarterback year, missing a couple of games as well as Tyrod Taylor was starting at first. And the one thing I would say is underrated is maybe the fact that crowd noise is going to be a factor again. And, maybe we see some younger players that are a little more shell-shocked as environments are a little bit more hasty nowadays, but Herbert has a much improved offensive line. They get back Derwin James. Joey Bosa has a full offseason to get healthy again. And the Chargers made money moves all offseason. Their offensive line is completely revamped. They have playmakers. They have a ferocious set of athletic defenders on defense. And I think that the Chargers are going to present a problem. And when you want to go look at serious, contending threats, you want to look at quarterback play. So if Justin Herbert is able to play at, 80% of what he did last year, that puts him as one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. And if you have one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, you're probably looking at a really legit shot to make it to the playoffs and do some noise when you're there. So I'm looking, I think, at two teams that maybe aren't quite as traditional, but the other one there, I think, was the Colts. I think that if Carson Wentz is 70% as good as he's been at his best with that team that's deep and well-coached and has some playoff experience, that they'll be in a really good spot as well. So those are the three teams I'm looking at to be legitimate, balanced threats. And, Wentz, we'll see. He was atrocious last year. But if he is able to have solid quarterback play and do some similar things to what Phillip Rivers did in any degree, providing a little bit more mobility, providing a little bit more, fresh legs and a live arm a little bit more so, then the Colts will be in a good spot as well.
Yeah, I agree, Spencer. Those three teams are all teams to keep an eye on. I also think Miami, if Tua Tagovailoa can take that leap for them, would be another contender. They have a very solid defense, a stout secondary, one of the best secondaries in the league up there with Baltimore, as I like what they did in the draft as well. So the AFC, I think, is actually a sneaky deep conference. You know, some people don't really view it that way, but in my opinion, I think it is. But there are also those teams, Spencer, that everybody hypes up before the season starts, and they have high expectations placed on them, and then they flop during the regular season. They just don't have the year anybody anticipates, and they just don't perform well. So, Spencer, with those pretender teams, who are two or three teams that maybe people are viewing as threats to Baltimore, or just viewing as top teams in the AFC that maybe won't have as good of a year?
It's quick to look and point out a couple teams, and I think a lot of people are low on the Steelers, and I agree there, but they're so well coached, and Mike Tomlin has them win games that they've never had a losing season, so you can't entirely count them out. So I won't quite go with them, but I'm looking to the Tennessee Titans, and I'm also looking to the Miami Dolphins. The reason being, for the Titans, I feel that they are very shallow offensively, and in addition to losing Arthur Smith, who I think is underappreciated as a magnificent red zone play caller, the Titans have been incredible in the red zone. They have scored touchdowns on, I believe, over 66% of their drives, dating back to when Arthur Smith took over as offensive coordinator. And they were at one point, they're around 71% last year. I'm not sure what they finished at, but he did a great job mixing up his bag in the red zone and giving, you know, a very, very misfit defense a lot of opportunities to hold other teams in the red zone and win games that way. And I ultimately like Mike Vrabel as a coach, but I think Arthur Smith might have been more valuable than him. I don't trust relying on A.J. Brown, a guy who's had a couple surgeries, Julio Jones, who's older, and Derrick Henry coming off of a 7,000-touch season, as well as Ryan Tannehill, who really has only played like that for Arthur Smith to change, to be innovative, to grow, and to stay healthy. I think their offensive line is in a strange spot. They did go out and get Dylan Raidens, who I do like a lot, but you know, rookie offensive linemen don't tend to play at a super high level, especially ones that aren't drafted really high. It happens a couple times a year, but offensive line is maybe the biggest jump aside from quarterback play from college to the NFL in terms of what you're asked to do and the players that you're simply asked to handle. So I think it's going to be a tough transition for them. I think that, of course, you know, you look at Julio Jones, you look at A.J. Brown, and you think, wow, and Derrick Henry, and you think, oh, wow, they're you know, going to have a Super Bowl shot on those guys alone. But you're really putting a lot of probability into staying extremely healthy and with guys that have a lot of wear and tear on their body. So I'm not sure that I trust the Titans to be a true contender. Will they make the playoffs? I think they have a strong shot to, but I don't see them growing or being better than they were. You know, Julio Jones is a big upgrade to Corey Davis, but Corey Davis had a great year last year. And, you know, that definitely is going to help things. Julio is kind of the saving grace, but it feels kind of like, you know, an NBA team that has a couple star players, but isn't quite deep enough and doesn't have the bench players to really make a title run, is the best way to put it. Their defense, we'll see, you know, Harold Landry, a player that I think is capable of a lot more, and who I can't even recall who the Titans brought in as their edge defenders. But ultimately, I just don't see them having the depth offensively or the talent defensively to be a major, major factor in a loaded AFC. And then looking at the Miami Dolphins, you know, their defense was dominant. Xavien Howard had what I thought should have been a, you know, defensive player of the year season. I believe that he is a high impact player. I think Brian Flores has a magnificent scheme. I think that they've gotten elevated play to guys like Andrew Van Ginkle and some of their inside linebackers, and what they're doing is definitely awesome on that side of the ball. I think that Tua Tagovailoa, to me, you know, ahead of the draft, I was super concerned about his hip. I'm not a doctor, but hip injuries don't seem like long-term safe bets, especially on really young players. So I think him playing last year and proving that he could, you know, get back to playing football was a big step ahead of what I anticipated, to be honest. So to me, Tua was ahead of the eight ball in terms of dealing with that injury and being able to come and make plays, but you just aren't sure what you're going to get out of him. And like I said, you know, if you're trusting him to be a top 10 quarterback, then you're probably going to be a playoff team. But if he's turning the ball over consistently, if he's putting out three or four games where he's looking like a Mitch Trubisky, that's going to be a tough scene for the Dolphins. But, you know, they had Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's able to get the ball to Devontae Parker. And they do have a ton of weapons now with Will Fuller. And they also grabbed Jalen Waddle. And of course, Mike Gesicki at tight end. They don't have a real horse running back, but you can find those through the nooks and cracks of the NFL and UDFAs and all that good stuff. But a lot of it's just going to come down to Tua, and it feels like they might have gotten a little bit luckier last year and caught a lot of teams by surprise last year, especially early on, but they weren't able to get it done down the stretch. Tua wasn't able to get it done. And, you know, I'm counting on him to improve this year, but is he a Mitch Trubisky type quarterback? I feel like that might ultimately be where he is, a guy that can make plays with his legs and get the ball in some good situations, but just isn't picking defenses apart early and often. But with the speed that they have and with the receivers that they have now, he's going to have every available option to be a really strong offense. And if he's able to play at a high level, then I'm completely wrong. And the Dolphins are a serious Super Bowl threat. But I just don't feel that when you're looking at other teams like the Patriots, I trust Cam Newton over him. And you're looking around the rest of the AFC, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, even Ben Roethlisberger, you know, who's not, he's a shell of his former self, but ultimately, can Tua make the jump? It's a lot of pressure on him. And he was awesome at Alabama, but many quarterbacks have been awesome at Alabama and kind of outkicked their coverage there a little bit. And with that hip injury, you never know. There's another wild card involved there. So it was really drastic, the difference between Tua and Ryan Fitzpatrick. And, you know, you can count on quarterbacks to make leaps or not. But when you look at, you know, the last couple of years, Josh Allen's the only one that it feels like really made a leap in terms of being able to win football games. So it's a crapshoot with what you're going to get out of Tua and health-wise. So to me, I'm a little bit out on the Dolphins, but I do have them as, you know, a team that can win 9, 10, maybe even 11 games in the 17-game format. But feels like last year they caught a lot of teams by surprise, and this year, you know, that division is going to be tough. The Jets aren't this bottom dweller anymore, potentially, if they get anything out of Zach Wilson. And ultimately, the conference is really tough, and I just don't see the Dolphins being at the top of it.
Yeah, yeah. And as I did talk about, you know, with the Dolphins being somewhat of a contender for me, it all does depend on Tua. And I do agree with you, Spencer, that if he doesn't have a great year in 2021, not, you know, not a good year, but a great year in 2021, it could be some tough sledding for Miami, but their defense is one that I think could potentially carry them through some games. You never know there. But I do agree. The Titans were my pick as a team that I just think is very shallow on offense, as you would kind of mention there. Their defense really didn't take a ton of steps there. And so for me, I think it's a team that is definitely playoff bound potentially, but I think they're probably a wild card exit once again. But Spencer, that's all that I have for you here today. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I know we are in the dog days of summer here, but we are getting closer to training camp, closer to the preseason. And I think before we know it, really the 2021 season will be upon us.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's the calm before the storm, the time where you can really sit back, relax, and know that football is on its way. And it's going to be a long fall and winter, and we've got an extra game now, and it'll take us through February. So enjoy the summer, get out there, enjoy nature. Things are back opened up a little bit. Get out and about and get some sun on your skin and enjoy yourself, get vaccinated and stay healthy and get ready for football season.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Spencer. When we get back here tomorrow, we'll be answering your mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.